RadioInfluence.com.
You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
And welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, Games Galore 45. I'm your host, Brian Edwards, joined by Harbo of
SunsetPicturesCompany.com.
Yep. We had a last week off. Harbo was out of town. But we are back. Now, since we've been gone, GG44 concentrated on Oscar being overboard. We were told, I don't know, within a few days of that, I think that was August 1st when that broke, that it would be they would hope to have the investigation wrapped up in 14 days. Here we are on the 16th. So you would think we'll have some sort of resolution here in the next perhaps 48 to 72 hours, but
who knows?
Maybe early next week. Who knows? And since then, another Big Ten coach. Big Ten used to always make fun of the SEC and all their scandals and cheating and what have you. Jordan McNair tragically died back in May, I believe it was. And so some investigations were launched. You know, DJ Durkin, the head coach, was not there. If I'm not mistaken, that I believe NCAA rules the off-season conditioning. I think just the strength and conditioning coach and then the, you know, medical training staff, I think those are the only ones allowed to be at those drills. So, but anyway, it was there. I think they were running 11 110-yard sprints, and he had a heat stroke, and they did not call 911 for an hour. They just did everything freaking wrong. Everything wrong.
They tell him to go in the sauna, chill out. Like,
they did. No, they did not put him in ice. They did not call an ambulance. They didn't do anything. It was crazy.
Yeah, it was insane.
Absolutely insane. This kid, Jordan McNair, should not have passed away at all. The strength and conditioning coach has been fired. It was it yesterday or 2 days ago that the president and Damon Evans, familiar name to the show, we won't go into why he's so familiar today because we're talking about a serious topic here, although he might be losing a job again because he was the interim AD at that time. Well, why it took him 62 days, I have no idea. Obviously, the explosive story from ESPN that came out, I believe, Saturday night, if I'm not mistaken, or Friday night, which, you know, had a lot of anonymous sources, former disgruntled players, former coaches, you know, saying it was a toxic environment. The one of the former coach anonymously said he would never, never let his son play there. And then I saw Jabril Peppers of Michigan came out today because Durkin was D coordinator at Michigan after he was with the Gators and Muschamp for a while. He said that, what was Peppers' quote? It was that I'm not looking at it right now. I don't want to say it wrong. I think it was just something like he thought he was a little too intense. Here, I know exactly where to find this quote.
He just went overboard.
Why is it not on this page? That's what it says?
Oh, I don't know.
Jabril?
Yeah, here, see, Durkin coaching
stuff. Oh, yeah,
there it is. Extreme at times.
Extreme at times. That was the quote I was looking for, sorry. Extreme at times. So, Muschamp went to bat for his former DC. Yesterday, the day before, the president, or chancellor, whatever the hell he's called, they call it different at different schools, and the AD, Damon, Red Panties Evans, they went to the McNair family house in Baltimore, I believe it was, and then they went to, that was pretty, you don't ever see this. When you know there's going to be lawsuits and whatnot, you rarely see the president of a university get on a microphone at a planned press conference, it was being carried live on ESPN2, and say that we traveled to Baltimore, we saw the McNair family, and we accepted moral and legal and whatever responsibility. You know, the kid should not have died. The strength coach was fired. DJ Durkin and some training staff guys have been suspended. The board at Maryland is meeting tomorrow, and I would think that there's a good chance DJ Durkin will be fired.
Does the family get a check from that?
I mean, obviously they're admitting we're cutting you a big check. I don't know if they cut it right then, but they admitted, okay.
I mean, not to make the light of the situation. I'm just curious.
Yeah, no, I don't think they cut a check yet. But, I mean, they let them know that, look, you don't waste any money on lawyers.
We messed up.
We owe you, and we're going to get it to you, and we can figure this thing out. We don't want y'all wasting money on lawyers because we know we fucked up. Bad.
Gotcha.
All right, as for Ohio State, there's been a lot of he said, she said, little shifts in momentum, if you will, on whether he's going to be retained or stay. The longer this goes, the better it is for Oscar. And it's obviously going on a long time. So there's this...
Dude, what if he stays?
He's going to get suspended for at least 4 to 6 games, I would think.
Should have placed that bet.
Of him being stay. Yeah, he was a big underdog to stay that first day. He was a huge, he was like plus 200, plus 250 or something. What's his name? I'm trying to think of the media guy, not McMurphy, but the other guy. I write it down on my notes. Flacco, I don't know what his name is.
Flacco.
I don't know. There's Burrow. I don't know. Google Ohio State journalists interviews Courtney Smith's mom. Okay, so, and Harbo will have the name for me in a minute. Go back and let's see some more on that page. Let's see. Don't worry about it. So this guy, he interviews Courtney Smith's mom, Tina Carano. Okay. And Carano and Courtney are estranged.
Right.
Okay. And I'm looking on. I was looking for his name there. They're estranged. So this guy has a text messages only conversation with Courtney Smith's mom, Tina Carano. Okay. In that text messages only, she basically throws her daughter down the river, says that not only she thinks all the marks on her were Zach just being defensive to get her off of him. She says a lot of other stuff, like that Courtney's been talking about getting back at Zach. Zach obviously being the wide receivers coach that got fired.
So mama's not on her side.
Well, she wasn't with this local Ohio author guy. She was not. But then McMurphy, so you know, McMurphy's got a lot at stake here. I mean, he is
right.
He is, you know, this bombshell freaking story that might take down one of the, you know, bigger assholes, albeit best coaches in college football history, might be taking him down. So McMurphy's got a lot at stake here. So he gets to work once he reads all that. I'm just going to speculate that he went to Courtney, and Courtney. I don't think that this. God, I can't believe I can't think of this fucker's name.
I'm trying to find it. Marcus?
Just say interviews Tina Carano instead of Courtney Smith. Say interviews Tina Carano. T-I-N-A. But McMurphy goes to Courtney. I'm going to assume that. And the other guy, the guy's name we're trying to get, he did not print. To my knowledge, he did not print the text messages. Like, he didn't make those available the way McMurphy has done with all the text messages from Shelley Meyer, Herbs, Oscar's wife, etc. McMurphy, the next day, I guess he goes to Courtney, and Courtney shows a bunch of text messages. And so McMurphy does get Courtney's mom, Tina Carano, on the phone. And he, I'm just going to assume that the mom of Courtney like, when they were on good terms years ago, sent Courtney these texts, you know, where she could see what was said between the mom and Zach Smith.
Right.
And, yeah, I'm not seeing
it. Oh, yeah, sure. I can't find it.
I don't worry about it. All good. Well, God, where was I?
So they're on good terms. They got the text message.
Oh, yeah. So McMurphy gets the text messages in which Tina Carano is texting Zach and saying, I can't believe you're doing this to her. I can't believe you beat her up again. You know, I can't believe you did this and that. And he's acknowledging all this. And McMurphy puts those on his Facebook page where everybody... So basically all the reporting that had Ohio State, you know, Buckeye douchebag
right.
group...
Right.
We won't call them nation.
Group. No, no.
Group.
They're a small band of thieves.
Small. And by the way, just let's be clear on this, because I've had somebody say that I hate Ohio State recently. I don't know if we have any Buckeye fans listening, but here's the deal with me and the Buckeye group or what have you. You haven't ever beaten me. Why would I be mad at you? I love you. I love playing you. I love winning natties on your face decisively, pimp slap fashion, 41-14 in football. I think you guys got a couple late jumpers. I want to say we only beat you 74-65 for the hoops natty. I was there. Hot Atlanta, now defunct Georgia Dome. That was an ass beating. That 9-point final margin of victory was completely misleading. Ohio State, you don't beat me enough, okay, for me to have any morsel of dislike for you. Hell, we even beat you in the NIT a couple years ago, Mike White's first year. And we also beat you in that bullshit Central Florida 11 a.m. bowl game. Muschamp's first year, and right when Oscar was taken over, when he was still collecting that million from Florida, and then, you know, turning us in for recruiting violations that the NCAA investigated and determined we'd done nothing wrong. So, yeah, no, Ohio State, I don't give a shit about you. I invite you to meet me in national title games moving forward.
My hatred just runs deep.
Right. Well, I understand that. That's a lifelong hatred. I get it. I get that. Where are we on this now? Fuck if I know, man. I
think he might stay.
I said initially the first few days, there's no way he survives this with the Me Too movement, et cetera. You know, we've got to see what this report, what it comes out with. They just now interviewed Courtney and Zach in the last, like, 48 hours. So that makes me think this 14-day goal is... nonsense.
Yeah, it's not real.
But I mean, in terms, if they are leaning toward keeping him, they want to get it done as soon as possible because he's not allowed to have contact with his coaches or players right now, which I'm sure he's still doing.
Yeah, I don't know, man. He'd be kind of an idiot to do that, though.
To make contact with
him?
Yeah. Well, he is a fucking idiot.
What's he doing? Sending, like, you know,
I don't know.
Pigeons with
he's not allowed
notes,
to be in contact.
Notes tied around their foot.
Right. In fact, I think he had his, like, university phone, like, taken from him and et cetera.
He's got a burner. He's at Walmart at, like, 2 a.m.
I love how miserable he is right now. I do love that. I don't hate Ohio State, but I love how miserable Oscar and Shelly. You too, Shelly. Glad you're miserable also right now. Sorry.
The Myers are in a pickle.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Other news. Man. Tough injury for the Redskins. Darius Geis was looking like a stud, and SEC fans know that he is a stud, but he tears his ACL for the Skins. Had that great run where he was juking and stiff-arming, et cetera, but he's out for the year. Those of you, if you are evaluating the Northern Illinois Iowa game, I've got some injury news for you, and none of it is good for the Hawkeyes. So I'm trying to find that game and see how the line has moved with these injuries. Okay, here it is right now. Oh, wow. Well, it says I'm offshore here. I need what number is it? 171. Let me go to Vegas. Okay.
Who's your go-to, like, odds maker?
Westgate.
Okay.
Westgate. Okay, so... Oh, wait, that did the wrong game. Okay, here we go. All right. So, let's see. This opened... Yeah, it has moved quite a bit since these injuries. So Iowa was a 13.5-point favorite on May 26th. July 29th, it was moved to 12. August 6th, it moved to 11.5. Then on the 11th, or I'm sorry, the 8th, it went down to 11. And then 10.5. And then the 9th, it went down to 10. It's back up to 10.5. Iowa at home versus the Huskies of NIU. Now, so here are the injuries for the Hawkeyes. Let me get to their page. Here we go. All right, so Alaric Jackson, sophomore, he started all 12 games. Or I'm sorry, he started the first 12 games. I guess he was hurt for the bowl game. Offensive tackle, he's out. He's suspended just one game. Cedric Lattimore, who is the junior starting defensive tackle, he had 15 tackles, 1.5 sacks, 2 QB hurries last year. He's out, one game suspension. O-lineman, Tristan Wirfs, sophomore. He started 8 games as a freshman last year, and he's listed as the starter. He's out, one game suspension. So there's 2 O-linemen out. Starting defensive tackle Lattimore out. You've also got Landon Paulson, a junior starting guard. He's questionable. Spencer Williams is out for the season. He's a backup center. Brady Reef, one game suspension, D lineman. Last year, Reef had 13 tackles, 1 INT, 1 QB hurry, and 3 passes broken up. DB, Manny Rugamba. He has left the program, as has Brandon Snyder, who transferred to one of the Dakota states. I think it was South Dakota State. So, Iowa is going to be down 2 starting O-linemen, 2 starting D-linemen, and they've got a questionable backup center, and Spencer Williams done for the season. So, that's why that line has moved. So... You have that. All right, and the North Carolina, you know, I was looking at all the guys suspended for North Carolina. Other than Chaz Surratt, the quarterback, not many of these guys are important players. There was one wide receiver. Let's see. I'm not on my North Carolina page. Yeah, Bo Corrales that, you know, had like, I don't know, 15, 18 catches last year. But the other guys are not they're not listed as starters, and some of them have never even taken a snap. And let me go look and see how that line has moved. I know California is north of 7. Remember, they won as a double-digit dog in a, on a, at a noon Eastern tip, or not tip, kick. In the south, muggy hot, first weekend of the season, you know, 9 a.m., West Coast time for Cal Berkeley players, and they came and they beat North Carolina outright. So big revenge game for the Tar Heels, but won't have their starting quarterback. Okay, that, this time it's a 4 Eastern kick on Fox, Big Fox. Let's see how this line has moved. A lot of books at 8.5 right now. Cal was 6.5 in May. Then it went down to 6, and it went down to 4.5. And when did this suspension news come out? I'm going to guess it came out around August 5th or 6th. And now a lot of books are at 8.5. The Westgate's only at 7.5. Cal favored, obviously. so, a little UFC stuff. Oh, by the way, Kelly in Vegas will be joining us in about 23 minutes from Sin City.
You guys going to play some bets?
She's already in my pocket a dime deep, and I can't be chasing that money with a quarterback situation unsettled. Now, she will be reminded that she is holding that $1,000 for me.
Right.
God, that's how bad we suck, man. How do I lose a $500 straight up bet against Kansas fucking State? Oh my God, these are tough times for the Gators. Sheesh, Luis. That's unbelievable. That just pissed me off all over again.
Did you see that ranking chart? It was popular today with like athletics and the amount you party.
Oh, no. Well, I saw something with UCLA and Florida in basketball, and I was like, oh, bad matchup for the Bruins. Don't care how many daddies they got. They're 0 for life against us.
I'll find it and show you in a sec. The Gators are rated high.
Good. Good, good, good. Good, 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 good. And Kendall Hinton from Wake, he's out the first three games of the suspension. Wake is -7 at Tulane. Tulane, I like Willie Fritz, man. Tulane might be a little sneaky surprise team. I was saying that was going to be Maryland. Excuse me, sorry. I shouldn't have done that so loud in the mic, huh?
Oh, you're all right.
I hope that he does well at Tulane. I've been talking about Maryland being an under the radar squad. I don't know with all this that's going on. I mean, they may lose their whole staff. Who knows? That was water. I am going to grab a Budweiser on the break, though, when KIV comes in.
Here's this graph, dude. So you've got your least partying schools, or most partying. Then you have the least amount of academics and the most amount of academics. And the Gators are right in here, I thought I saw them earlier up at the top.
I'm not seeing that logo. Hold on. I'll find
it. I swear I saw it earlier. I thought y'all were in the top. Yeah, right there.
Oh.
You party hard and you're pretty smart, man.
Oh, yeah. Why in the hell is Georgia rated ahead of us? Or are you better if you're to the right further?
They're less smart, but they party a little harder.
Oh, well, that's okay. Athens is a great party town.
Yeah.
I've always said it a million times. If I couldn't go to Florida, not because of your sports.
Right.
For your culture. The music, the ladies wearing black and red. Man, I tell you, when you do laps around the Gator Bowl where the Jags play before the Florida FSU game, I mean, eye candy does not get much better than that. And like, you know, every time I'm there, God, I haven't been to a game there since 2009. You know, let's say the game's it's normally 3:30 kickoff or 2:30
right
our time here in Central. But you know, you get there early and like at 1:30 you just grab a couple of your buddies, like, dude, let's grab two beers each, let's do a lap around. And I mean, yeah, the eye candy is just brilliant. Hey, shout out to the ladies in orange and blue too now. But the ones in red and black are stellar to say the least. Love Athens, Georgia. Stanford, as you know, over 8.5 is the play. They've now all the books are up to South Carolina 7.5 or like 7 over, at least -150. I mean, God, I can't believe I didn't get more on that earlier this summer. I mean, I got a good chunk, but man, So Boise State is 10.5 at Troy. In week one, that's a 6 p.m. Eastern game. That's on ESPN News. I was talking with Todd Dewey of the Las Vegas Review-Journal yesterday, and I think he's going to have an article about new coaches and have some of my quotes. And I wasn't necessarily ranking the hires or even grading them. I was just kind of talking about the influence in year one. And I said, you know, you might rank Scott Frost the best hire. You might rank Chip Kelly the best hire. But let me tell you, it ain't happening for UCLA or Nebraska this year. Those are massive rebuilds, and it's not happening in one year. I mean, I'm not saying those teams can't go 7-5 and go to a bowl game, but if either were to get to 8 wins, I would be shocked. And I said the coaches that walk into the best situations, I've told you about him, by the way, right? Don't say his name, but I've told you about him, right?
I believe so.
Okay, I'll tell you on the break.
Okay.
To remind you. Kind of goes to that headline. Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State and Kevin Sumlin are the ones that walk into situations where they can be immediately successful. And with all the question marks for USC at the quarterback position, I believe Arizona and Utah have a legit shot in that Pac-12 South. In fact, I am nothing crazy, nothing large, but I'm recommending a very, very small wager on Arizona to win that division at a plus 450 price. You got Khalil Tate back. Let's remember now, Tate didn't take over the starting job until we were into October. Still ran for, if we take away sack yardage, he ran for 1,530 yards, but net he had 1,411 yards rushing, 12 touchdowns, and an insane 9.2 yards per carry average. Their featured back, J.J. Taylor, is back, averaged 5.8 yards per game last year, 847 rushing yards. Tate has got Tony Ellison and Shun Brown, his two top receivers. And then he's got two other guys with one had 19 catches, one had 28 catches. They've got their top four tacklers back and eight of their top nine tacklers back. Let's go through the schedule for Arizona. I mean, I see eight wins. Let me get that win total here real quick. And Arizona. 7.5. Oh, but big juice on the over. Gross. Minus 175. So that's sportsbook.ag. I can't recommend anything minus 175 unless it's small potatoes. And the thing is, if Tate gets hurt for a few games, you might be screwed. Because Brandon Dawkins transferred. And I know where he transferred to. Where did he transfer to? Somewhere decent. It's Power 5. God, where is it? I thought Phil Steele would have it here, but he doesn't.
Come on, Steele.
Darn, Phil. You're supposed to have all these things on my page for me. Damn it, where did he go? It's going to piss me off for a while. Anywho, Arizona, 7.5, but with the price, I can't recommend it. But look, they beat BYU in week one. I think they'll win at Houston in week two. Obviously, they'll beat Southern Utah and Oregon. They'll be 4-0 with USC coming into town. And if they win that game, boom, wow, they're in the driver's seat. But they've got to play at Utah on a short week. Obviously advantageous. Maybe even a little, obviously advantageous to the home team being the Utes with the short week of preparation. And October 12th, a little altitude, maybe a little cold weather already that the Arizona boys won't be used to. They're going to lose that one. Cal at home will be a letdown scenario if they beat USC, but I still think they get that W. I think they win at UCLA. Oregon at home, I don't know. Let's just say this. Let's say they split out of at UCLA and Oregon at home. Colorado at home on a short week, that's a W. Then they get 2 weeks to prepare for at Washington State. I've got that one as a toss-up, and Arizona State at home, W. So Arizona's going to be right in the mid. It's going to be a three-way battle with Utah right there as well. But USC, I haven't read much on their quarterback battle. I know that they haven't announced anyone, but they don't have anybody with any experience. I mean, Fink had 9 pass attempts last year, 6 completions, 43 yards. I've said it a million times. You don't have a quarterback, you're in trouble. And they have to go at Utah and at Arizona, which are their two toughest in the division. They've got to go at Stanford. That's an L. They've got to go at Texas. Well, 3 of their first 5 games are on the road. For a quarterback, whoever it is, making their first career road start, that's no fun. And then they go at UCLA later in the year. They've got Notre Dame at home's not a layup. So anyway, Sumlin walks into a good situation. So does Moorhead. I mean, we've talked about Mississippi State, but just a little more on that. Only lost 14 Letterman. Went 9-4 last year. Maybe they go 10-3 if Fitzgerald doesn't get hurt in the first quarter of the Egg Bowl. Although I shouldn't say that. I mean, Ole Miss was the better team for four quarters that night. And in fact, the final was a little misleading. Ole Miss was up double digits most of that game. But if Fitzgerald doesn't get hurt, you know, who knows? But and then obviously they should have beat Alabama. God, should they have ever beaten Alabama? That game has been on the ESPNU top 25 games of last season countdown, and I watched a little bit of the second half one day a week or two ago, and oh, they had them dead to rights. Couldn't finish. Okay, so Mississippi State brings back 9 starters on offense, 8 on defense. You know, they've got all their top rushers back, 3 of their top 4 receivers back. I mean, you've got NFL players and Jeffrey Simmons and Montez Sweat on that D-line. It might be the best D-line in the country. Mark McLaurin might be the best safety in the country. Moorhead walks into a gold mine. As for Jimbo and for Mullen, who else am I forgetting? Jimbo and Mullen, they walk into, I'd say, somewhere in the middle of where, you know, Kelly and Frost are, massive rebuilds, and where Moorhead and Sumlin are like, let's win now. This is a year to win now. I would say Mullen and Dumbo are in the middle, right between. Potentially could have big years. But, I mean, A&M's got to play at Alabama and Clemson at home in September, so we'll know fast with them. What Mullen's got going for him is an easy schedule. What Mullen doesn't have going for him is quarterbacks. Very important. So the day after our last Games Galore, 44, when Gamlu gave away Henry Cejudo, the upset, that's a good call by
him. Gave it away.
I had a rough
night. You were listening.
I had a rough night that last night. The only one I won was the under on, was that when Poirier was fighting Alvarez?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right?
Right, yeah.
No, I think that might have been the week before in Calgary. And this pay-per-view was in L.A. It was just a week before. They had, like, the events, like, 5 weeks in a row. And now we still got, well, we got Vic and Gaethje coming up.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, and they're talking a lot of shit.
Of course they are.
Vic just calls him a punching bag, a punch drunk punching bag. He goes, "You're gonna be back in the minor leagues after I'm done with you, facing B-level competition." I'm a big, big, big believer in James Vic.
I was just gonna say, what are the odds on Khabib and McGregor?
They're not as expensive as they were. Right the day they announced the fight, some Conor money came in. Because you remember, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while, how big a favorite. Yeah, he's all the way down to minus 170 at 5 dimes. Minus 160 at Bet Online is your cheapest price on Khabib. One of my books went down to minus 150, and I got a little bit of Khabib.
Gotcha.
All right, yeah. 5 dimes was minus 245.
Woo.
As recently as July 26th. But
it's a lot.
Yeah, but some people jumped on McGregor. Your best comeback payout that I see is at 5 dimes plus 160.
For McGregor?
Yeah. And they've got Black Beast fighting Alexander Volkov in the co-main. But the rest of that card is going to be dog shit. They don't care. They just know everybody.
Oh, my gosh. Everyone's going to buy
that. Oh, yeah. I mean, they've got like a flyweight, Sergey Pettis.
They got the Karate Hottie.
Oh, that's a good fight, actually. Felice and the Karate Hottie. I like that fight. Well, I don't know why they don't have odds on that fight. Yeah, they've got odds on others. But, the big news, obviously, was Conor Khabib, which didn't I say I thought it might be coming in the next few days that day? I think I did.
Yeah, we were just trying to decide if it would be, like, December.
It was going to be December 30th or October 6th.
Yeah.
And it's October 6th, thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, that's soon, Harbo.
I know, it's very soon. I haven't really followed it. I don't know, like, has McGregor posted anything? Is he training? Is he, like...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He's not talking shit. to Khabib. Well, Khabib's family and team, Khabib's dad is talking mad shit.
Oh, he is?
And Khabib tweeted at Trump, hey, you know, POTSUA or whatever.
POTUS?
POTUS, whatever. You know, essentially saying, hey, Trump, please help my dad get a visa to come to my fight. I think it was like the day that Dana had Colby at the White House and
okay,
all that.
Okay, nice.
Oh, Colby's beefing with everybody right now. Everybody. Who is he? Oh, he says
he's just screaming.
He's going to slap Till around for this. I love how he always goes, yeah, all the nerds, the nerd nation.
Classic high school bully.
Oh, God, he is the vintage high school bully. That's what he is, man. That's what he is. And then he got asked by the media, so, you know, are you mad you got passed up? He goes, nah, I just wanted to build up the fight a little longer. I had to get nasal surgery. I just wanted to build it up.
Right.
And then he goes, and look. You know, I'll fight anybody. I'm the undisputed champion anyway. He goes, I'll fight Nick Diaz if he quits beating women. He named like four other people. Woo. He said somebody was a bum. And, oh, he's just mad. I mean, he does it a little different than Chael, but he talks mad shit. So, Nate is back. God, I love it. Did you watch the stare down with Nate and Poirier?
No.
Man, it was good. Nate's got respect for him.
When's he scheduled? Are they 3:30?
November 3rd, 2:30. UFC 2:30.
Or 2:30, yeah.
Co-main event. I cannot wait to see how much Nate's getting paid in that.
I wonder, yeah.
I loved his. So they're asked Nate that that presser the Friday before that pay-per-view when Mighty Mouse got upset. They asked Nate, the first time he got asked a question, it was like, so Nate, you know, you've been on a two-year hiatus. You know what about this fight made you come back? And he just kind of nodded. He grabs the mic and he goes, "It's time to go." So it's time to go. He just drops the mic.
Well spoken.
And then they asked him something else again, and he goes, "I ain't been able to fight. I ain't turned down no fights. I've been in a lawsuit. I don't know why nobody won't tell you guys that."
Mic drop.
And I guess afterwards he was bitter. So when they queued up the thing at the end, the video previewing Khabib and Connor, Nate just walks out. He walks out.
I'm done.
I'm out. Then they've got him on video outside, and he's just cussing. And he tweeted, "Fuck the UFC. I'm not fighting in that show."
Yeah.
And then they're asking him. So who do you like between Khabib and Connor? He goes, "They're both my bitches. I beat Connor twice. I slapped Khabib right in the face in front of his team. They didn't do nothing. Nothing." But Nate looked really big, man. And he in the face-off with Dustin, it was pretty sweet, man.
Let's check it out, dude.
And Dustin's being very respectful. Dude, that fight is going to be great. And as much as I like Dustin, I made the odds minus 260, mm-hmm. and they're much lower than that. But the more I think about it, you can't ever doubt what Nate Diaz is going to do, man.
No.
And he just looked he looked a lot bigger than Dustin, which was interesting.
He's a junkyard dog, dude.
Man, I love me some Nate Diaz.
He likes to fight.
That fight, woo, that one's going to be good. Oh, they were asking him, do you see this as like a semifinal to fight the winner of Conor Khabib? Nate just grabs the mic all frustratingly and goes, "This is a championship fight right here." Blup. Games Galore 45, Kelly in Vegas will be with us when we return in just a few. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back, Games Galore 45. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. Let's get out to Las Vegas and get one of our favorite regular guests. Her name is Kelly Stewart, a.k.a. Kelly in Vegas. What's happening?
Not a whole lot. Just getting prepped for football season. It's kind of like the calm before the storm. I was just laughing before you called. I looked at my schedule. I'm going, good God, it's going to be a busy couple weeks before college football kickoff.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, I'm going to have my – I have a little mini Vegas. Now, I'm only a three-hour drive from Biloxi, Mississippi, where they have opened. So I'm going to go there week two of college and week one of NFL. I'm going to be out in Vegas that same weekend as last year, Florida, Georgia, and then always do the Sweet 16 weekend. Enough about me. I hear you got a new J-O-B. Tell us all about it, Kelly.
Yeah, super exciting. So I was kind of just trying to figure out, with, as you know, and as most of your listeners probably know, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of not making sports betting illegal federally and leaving it up to the states. So I was kind of trying to figure out, you know, do I want to go more mainstream now that the ESPN, Fox Sports, NBCs of the world are looking to break into the market? And I got a lot of different feedback from agents and people. And I said, you know what, like, I kind of am not sold that these companies are going to be amazing right out of the gate. And Johnny Detroit's a good friend of mine over at Wager Talk. He said, you know, I've been trying to get you to come work for us and do the exact same thing for a long time, Kelly. And I said, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to shoot videos. I want to do radio. I want to have a great time. And so far, so good. Been with those guys about a month and a half now and really looking forward to football season. Pretty much going to still do all of my own plays. I'm not going to be selling plays. I'm going to still be giving out like the fun hottie threesome type plays where we find, you know, some big dogs with a chance to win outright, and just kind of get more into the mainstream media as opposed to just the handicapper side.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Oh, so no more VI?
Unfortunately, no more VI.
Yeah.
No more anything that is not with those
Wager
guys. It's pretty much
gotcha
with Wager Talk. Yeah. So basically, anything that's like TV related, that's just kind of how it's going to be for now. As long as, you know, there's a handicapping type space, they wanted me to be exclusive, and I said, okay, well, let's do it.
Good deal. Congratulations. Awesome. But I know you still like to gamble, so we're going to talk about things from the gambling
angle. That's the best part. Somebody emailed me back and was like, but you're still going to gamble, right? And I'm
duh.
Like, does this person know me at all?
Right. All right, so you gave me a couple of NFL totals you liked, and obviously with the way Garoppolo took, what were they? They were, I think they were 1-10, and then they went 5-0 with him. And I know some, as the regular season was ending, some, you know, cappers had them like number 11 or 12 in the league in Vegas rankings, you know, if they were to have, you know, advanced to the playoffs or had another regular season game. So their hype is high. Their win total is 8.5. Now, I'm looking at an offshore, and I know a lot of times these offshores will have different prices than what you're looking at in Vegas. So correct me if you can get this at a much better price, but I'm seeing 8.5 is got a -160 price on the under, +130 for the over. What say you on that one, KIV, for the 49ers?
Yeah, so where I got it was at the win, -125. It may not be any longer. That was about 2 weeks ago. And actually, I was talking with my buddy Marco about this yesterday, and he likes it. Now I'm thinking about adding more, even though, like you said, it's -160. There's probably some 140s around there too, but definitely getting juiced towards the under, and for good reason. Like you said, Jimmy G helped those guys win 5 of their last 5 games. They covered 4 of them, but they're a little bit fraudulent. How much did those teams have to play for? Why did they want to play? Were they already – did they solidify a spot to the playoffs? So I'm not going to give them as much hype as everybody thinks that they deserve. Again, I think Jimmy Garoppolo might – we might see him be a great quarterback over the years. But this 49ers team definitely still has some issues. I'm not completely buying it. I also really like the Rams this year in that division. I also like the Seahawks to take second. So, the 49ers are going to have a couple of spots where, of course, they're probably going to get wins versus Arizona, but I doubt that they get the cover, and I'm probably going to be betting, you know, the Bears in December with this team. So far, I took them under 8.5 wins.
We're talking with Kelly Stewart, Kelly in Vegas. Follow her on Twitter, at Kelly in Vegas. Find all her work at Wager Talk and Kelly in Vegas. Does KellyInVegas.com still exist?
It does still exist. It is just kind of a place for videos to live,
Gotcha.
People just to have stuff like that going, then obviously it's tied into the proxy site.
Well, Kelly is a Bronco, like I'm a Falcon, and so she, when we were chatting earlier, you know, she totally, full disclosure, this might be a homer pick, and I like the Falcons to go over as well, so she's disclosed it, but she likes the Broncos over their win total, which is 7. A little juice on the over. Tell us about it, Kelly.
Yeah, a little juice on the over. I think you can get minus 140, probably most offshores. I was just looking right now. To be honest with you, I don't know what to make of the Denver Broncos as a whole. I've heard great things out of training camp, but the one thing I do know is how much money Case Keenum and the Vikings made me last year. So I'm kind of banking on that Case is going to have that same mentality as he did with the Vikings. He finally is getting paid. He does not have the Vikings defense, but the Broncos defense isn't too shabby now that there's no more Aqib Talib causing, you know, issues like shooting himself and ripping off Crabtree's chain. There's a few games where I'm looking at, like, okay, they have wins at the Jets, Arizona, Cleveland. So, you know, there's three right away. I think that they've covered 8 of their last 12, 8-3-1 against the Raiders. I'm not high on the Raiders and John Gruden at all, so I'm going to give them at least one win, if not two wins there. Don't forget the toss-up games at Baltimore versus the Chiefs in Denver. Last year, the Chiefs went 2-0 versus Denver, which doesn't happen very often. I'm not so high on the Steelers, so Pittsburgh has to play in Denver against the Broncos. I think that could be a win, and again, we just touched on San Fran. So I don't really see San Fran being this powerhouse they are either. Listen, I'm not buying the Chargers hype, but even if I give the Chargers two wins, at worst, this is 8-8 Broncos team. I think they go 9-7.
And I mean, look, if Bradley Chubb and Von Miller are healthy, I mean, that could be, you know, I guess we got J.J. Watt and Clowney if they can ever be healthy together. But I mean, that defensive end duo is just going to be a nightmare for Mahomes, Carr, and Rivers in that division, because Chubb is big time, and they were fortunate he fell to them, and with Miller on the other side, you can't double team both of them. Shane Ray's a pretty good
pass. That is a very good point.
Yeah, you can't double team both of them. All right, let's switch over to college. Let's see. The hometown team, UNLV, win total of 6. What are you thinking there?
So Tony Miller, our buddy over at the Golden Nugget, released all the UNLV games back in July. He put spreads on all of them. He put them as a favorite. Technically, one of the games is a pick'em, but basically a favorite in 7 games. Puts a season win total of a 6. Southwind comes out and says, or 6.5. Southwind comes back and says, I think we're not going to give him quite that much credit. So the first thing that goes off in my mind is, ding, 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 something's not adding up here. So I start looking at this. They're going to get steamrolled by USC. K-State's old offensive coordinator that I bash on a regular basis is now at UTEP. So I know a couple of the guys on that coaching staff. That UTEP team is going to be a big dog to UNLV. Not a big dog, but at least, you know, a smaller double-digit dog to UNLV. But don't be surprised to see a good game from them. Arkansas State, last I looked, 7.5-point favorite at home versus the Rebels. I'm not so certain about this Hawaii team that they play late in November, and they always seem to play Nevada tough. At San Diego State's a loss. San Jose State might look like a garbage team like they always seem to, but don't be surprised to see UNLV have some struggles with them. Last year, we saw them 21-point lead at halftime, and they lost to Air Force. They're going to be a dog at Utah State. I see this team being lucky to win 6 games here. So I'm not high on the hometown team. I'll say it. I said it the other day at the RJ. I'm not buying the Tony Sanchez hype as a high school coach. And I just really don't think this UNLV team, how do you expect them if they can't, you know, cover games as big dogs, if they can't win games and cover? Like, I'm just not buying that they're going to win 6 games.
I remember seeing, I got, you know, when a game goes to halftime, I get that on my VI live odds feed, and I remember that it was in like a mountain time zone game, so being at Air Force, so it was like at a weird time of day, like I'm in the middle of watching like some very important games that are like, you know, early fourth quarter. But I see that the score at halftime and I'm like, oh God, I got to go bet Air Force second half. How in the hell is UNLV up by 21? And I get sidetracked watching my other games and I never go and bet Air Force at halftime. And then I see the final later and I just, that was awful. So I missed my chance there. Let's next go. Well, how do you see all this playing out for Urban Meyer? And I don't know if you follow the Durkin situation much at Maryland. I think Durkin's definitely gone. I initially thought that Urban would be gone. Now it's starting to seem like he might stick around with a suspension. But look, if they suspend him, there's going to be a lot of backlash, and we'll see how that goes down. What have you and let's say they suspend him for six games or four games or whatever. How do you think that impacts the Buckeyes?
So I absolutely agree with you. There's no way they're getting rid of Urban Meyer. There's no way they got rid of Jim Tressel over some tattoos and selling, you know, basically memorabilia, bowl rings, fun stuff like that. I don't think Ohio State fans really care. I don't know. I'm not necessarily saying Urban's at fault either. I try not to get too, like, buy into too much of the media hype and try to look at things from, like, an actual perspective. But I'm shocked. I don't really know what to think of the entire situation. I've heard four games is going to be the most he's going to be suspended. And do those four games really matter? No. Three or four of them, Oregon State, Rutgers, Tulane. Who cares?
Right.
The only one that's maybe as of concern would be TCU and the neutral site in Arlington, which is technically not going to be a neutral site, but you get the idea. I mean, and I still think that whether they have Urban Meyer or not, it doesn't matter. They're going to roll TCU. So I don't see this being an issue for Ohio State at all. And I'm not, again, I'm not saying they deserve to be punished or anything of that nature. Maybe Urban, you know, deserves maybe more than a slap on the wrist, but it's kind of hard to prove at this point in time. So I think this is not really, I think it's kind of a non-issue. And even if he gets six games, like you just suggested, at Penn State, might pose as an issue. But I'm really not thinking it's going to be that big of a deal. Everybody else is still going to be intact. And I think you'd be surprised how many times players rally around their coach, especially in situations like that.
Sure, sure. Let's go to your alma mater, K-State. I've got them marked with four definite W's, three definite L's, five swing games. Total is win total, obviously, 6.5 over minus 125, where I'm looking offshore at sportsbook.ag. You're still holding that dime for me, right? I don't know that I'm coming back after it this year. I don't trust my Gator quarterbacks, but I just want to remind you that dime of mine, just keep that set aside for me to come back for it one day, Kelly.
Yes, and I'll give you a chance to definitely win back your money. I don't think it'll be this year on my Kansas State Wildcats, like you just said, you're not so sure. And I think you basically stole my notes. You can definitely find three wins on the schedule, if not four, and there's a lot of what ifs.
Yeah.
We know that K-State's going to be a 21-point dog by the time kickoff happens in Norman in late October. They're going to be a dog at West Virginia. So there's two losses probably on paper. I just mentioned touch on TCU with Ohio State. I don't know what to make of this TCU team, but at TCU, at Baylor, everybody seems to be a little bit higher on Baylor this season. 3-point dog at home to Mississippi State. I actually do think K-State gets the win there. Beat South Dakota, beats UTSA. There's a lot of what ifs with this team. So I was pushing really hard, if you follow me on social media, to get rid of Dana Dimel, to get rid of Tom Hayes, our two coordinators. And yay, my dreams came true. Now we have Andre Coleman, absolute stud from the 90s, played at K-State, has been in Bill Snyder's system this whole time. So I don't think we're going to see much difference, though I do think we will see more passes thrown downfield, not in this dink and dunk kind of stuff we've seen before. And hopefully he can help get the running game going with Alex Barnes. Love that kid. I am concerned with, if anybody watched the bowl game, we had two quarterbacks, tail of two halves, right? Skylar Thompson, I'm sorry, started the first half. Alex Delton started the second half, and it was a night and day different game. And so if Delton can stay healthy, I'm totally okay with it. If not, I do think Skylar Thompson is capable, but he's not the type of kid to go into Norman, Oklahoma and win a game. If that makes sense. Alex Delton is. He's a game player. He's an athlete. So 6.5 wins is terrifying to me. We saw it open 6. It went 6.5 some spots. I had some buddies throwing down 5 dimes on it the other day when we were at the Westgate. And they're looking at me like, and I'm like, I'm not saying anything. You know how I feel about this team. So good luck. And, you know, I would be ecstatic if this K-State team won 9 games this year. And we've seen Bill Snyder year in and year out tend to overachieve with less. But this is a really, really tough schedule.
Yeah, no, and you guys beat Auburn up and down the field when y'all had them in, whatever it was, like 3 to 5 years ago, but found a way to somehow lose that game. And I really think that Mississippi State game is critical for both teams, obviously. And I think that's one that could go either way. But just because I haven't been on top of it, has Snyder announced whether Thompson and Delton, has he announced one as the starter? Is he letting them compete still before he names one?
So I've heard that it's going to be a competition, but it's not true. Like, it's just, I feel like that's just what he does. He doesn't announce. It's Delton for sure.
Okay. Gotcha.
Everybody I know, like the guys over at Go Power Cat, the guys over at Rivals that I know, same thing. It's Delton, but he tends to never, especially with the younger guys. Delton is a junior this year, but still, you know, newer to the system because he's always been hurt. So unfortunately, I think he's just kind of keeping that pressure on there, you know, get your good grades, behave yourself, because there's somebody standing basically right next to you. And I am not afraid to run a 2-quarterback system, which I think is the worst thing on the planet as a K-State fan. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him do it just to try to light a fire under someone.
We're talking to Kelly Stewart. Follow her on Twitter at Kelly in Vegas. You can check out her work at WagerTalk.com and KellyInVegas.com does a lot of stuff with Todd Dewey in the Review Journal as well, and long time friend of the show. So just looking at the rest of the Big 12, you know, I love Kyler Murray as a runner. I don't know so much that I like him as a, you know, in the pocket passer. He's a pretty short guy. But Oklahoma's got Anderson back. I mean, they're going to be pretty good, but I mean, I'm not going to be shocked if they don't win the Big 12 this year. I think TCU could be pretty good. I think Texas is getting a little too much hype. I like West Virginia. I mean, I don't trust them until I see their defense. And at NC State could be a tricky non-conference road game. But you know I love Greer, and I love their wide receivers. Who do you think, and Oklahoma State appears to be in a transition year, but they still have Justice Hill. They've still got McCleskey at wide receiver, and I just kind of trust Gundy on the offensive side, but their defense is always a question mark. I'm not, you know, saying win total or anything like that, but I mean, who do you lean to, or who do you think it's going to be between among, you know, several potential contenders in the Big 12?
You're right. There is just so many. And there's a lot of question marks, literally, as I'm looking at my Big 12 notes. Because you're right. I don't know what to make of this Oklahoma State team. Just, like you said, you got to give some credit to Mike Gundy for what he's been able to do. But they're only returning 5 guys on offense. That's always questionable. The Mountaineers. You're right. They're gonna have a stud offense like we saw them have a few years back. And so at some point in time, whoever scores last wins, and is that how they're going to win all their games? That's a great question. The good news for Oklahoma or for West Virginia is they get to play Oklahoma late. It looks like the last game of the year in November in Morgantown. So that will be good. They'll have plenty of time to get ready for that one. I kind of mentioned, I didn't really know what to make of this TCU team. I really respect Darius Patterson. I think he's done a really great job. They're only returning 5 guys on the offensive side of the ball. And their schedule is Southern, SMU, and then all of a sudden they have to play Ohio State, like we talked about earlier, on that neutral field. And I think that's where we're going to see what we need to see from TCU. I think depending on if they can get up and play that Ohio State team well, then maybe I should be a little bit higher on them. But right now I'm not loving it. You're absolutely right about the Texas Longhorns. it is so much hype every single year. I love Tom Herman. Well, let me phrase it. Loved Tom Herman at Houston. Because why? I love when a double-digit dog upsets, you know, a kind of team like Oklahoma. But I'm not sure this Texas Longhorn team is going to be a cohesive unit just yet. I think they may need one more year. I kind of like them to have a little revenge spot at Maryland, but I'm not running to the window to make a bet there. So that leaves me with Oklahoma. And unfortunately, I do think Oklahoma is going to win the Big 12 again this year. And it's an unfortunate event. I don't want it to happen, but
it does happen often. Back to Herman as an underdog at last year at Houston. I know you had them against Louisville on that Thursday night, in addition to that season opener against Oklahoma, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I had him a few times, and he was a money-making machine. But, you know, the problem is with this Texas team is they don't give coaches enough time to get their own players and to get their own system working. You know, you don't get 2-3 years and expect someone to be able to have 10 wins. It just doesn't work that way.
Kelly mentioned TCU. One little note on TCU that was some breaking info late last night, earlier this morning. Their sophomore nose guard, Ross Blacklock, he was co-defensive freshman of the year last year in the Big 12, and he was on the freshman All-American team. He had 27 tackles, 2 sacks, 4.5 tackles for loss. He has a torn Achilles and is out for the year. So if you're following along in your Phil Steele book, put a little mark by his name. He's done.
I'm doing that right now. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Yeah. No sweat. Yeah, Blacklock is out for the season. Okay, so I respect Kelly's handicapping knowledge, and I like to always throw my strong opinions at another handicapper and get their thoughts. So on that note, are you ready for my upset of the year, KIV? Are you ready?
Upset of the year, I'm ready.
Outright now, outright. Week 2, Williams-Brice Stadium, Kirby Smart and the Georgia Bulldogs go down at South Carolina. Now, in terms of their win total, I got them over 7 at even money, like in late May. And I know I had talked to you on the phone about, and we'll talk about your proxy stuff here in a little bit, and I've been asleep at the wheel on that. My bad, but I am already invested, but I was going to get a better price, I think, with you out there. But I did get it even money back in late May, and I've gotten some more. I love their – a lot of books have actually moved it to 7.5 on South Carolina's win total. And if it's 7, it's just crazy juice. I mean, there's probably a couple books left in Vegas that only have it like minus 150 on the over at 7. But most offshores have moved to 7.5 or are at just outrageous minus 190 or minus 200 numbers. I think the big thing is Debo Samuel. He had scored 6 touchdowns in the first 2 games last year in the first play from scrimmage in week 3 against Kentucky, but then he breaks his leg. And Bryson Allen Williams, their starting linebacker, got hurt in week 3. And those two guys are back. And they still went 8-4 and rallied to beat Michigan in the bowl game without one of their top, you know, 3 or 4 players on defense and without their best player on offense in Debo Samuel. And they've got another receiver who's a future NFL receiver, Brian Edwards. His mama spells it wrong with a Y, but that's okay. He's a stud. And I think Jake Bentley is poised for a monster year. A lot of people forget he reclassified, and when he started as a true freshman after the open date, they were 2-4, and he started the rest of the way, and they went 4-3 down the stretch, lost a overtime game to USF in the bowl game. He should have been a senior in high school at that point. He should have been a true freshman last year. Now he's a true junior, but age-wise, he's only a true sophomore. He's a coach's son. The coach is on the staff with Muschamp. I think Jake Bentley's ready for a monster year, and I think South Carolina is a legit contender. Any thoughts? I know that the games of the year with Georgia, it was as high as Georgia minus 14. I think it's come down a little. Any thoughts on that game or South Carolina's win total or anything SEC, wherever you want to go SEC?
I think you're right. There's a few games early on in every single like conference that I like to look and circle. And this is one I had circled as well, just because this South Carolina team, the final score last year was a little fraudulent. Game was tied 7-7 in the second quarter, trailed 14-7 in the third quarter, had that game covered, blew it late. So don't be surprised to see, you know, the betting public think that, hey, this Georgia team's back. They're returning, you know, eight guys. They're going to be back and be national champion contenders again. I'm not so much buying that as I am that they're going to be good again, but they're prime for an upset at this point. Now they're kind of, you know, second to Alabama, and that's who people want to beat. As far as Jake Bentley goes, I haven't done too much research on him. You've got a lot more information on him than I do, so I'm going to take your word on it and hope that you're right and this kid ends up being a stud. Few spots where I'm looking to bet against SEC teams. I'm probably going to be, like I said, on Kansas State +3 at home. I'm probably going to be on Louisville getting almost 4 touchdowns, probably by kick, against Alabama week 1. I'm looking to bet against Auburn probably as well week 1. One of the things that I love.
I agree. I like Washington. Sorry, go ahead.
I always like to say that you have to remember there's some SEC biases built into some of these lines early on with these big names like the Auburn Tigers and Washington Huskies. People aren't thinking that it's going to be, you know, some big monster game. It's going to be one of the best games, I think, for week 1. I actually had somebody tell me that either Auburn blows them out or Washington wins 31-30, and I laughed, and I click his bio, and I look, I'm like, oh, yep, you're in SEC country. Of course you think Auburn blows them out. So there's a few spots where, like I said, I like to do that. I would love to bet Miami over LSU week 1. I can't do it. I think they're overhyped as well. And the rest of the SEC, I'm just kind of hanging out. I always like to see, like, week 1, I want to see how
– Quarterbacks. You know, quarterbacks.
Right. Absolutely. What are we going to see from these kids? Because when you're playing, when Florida Gators are playing Charleston Southern, now's your time to shine. Show me what you've got. Like, let's see that you're confident. Let's see that you don't make mistakes. Because, sure, you can make those mistakes against a team like Charleston Southern and rebound from it and still blow them out. You cannot make those mistakes week, you know, 4 or 5 at Mississippi State, at Georgia, you know, things like that. So, just like I said, hanging tight. I'm going to bet, you know, some interesting numbers for week 1, but I'm really always like to sit back and watch all the games and see what we're actually going to see from these teams.
Kelly, you'll be proud of me. I have been trashing the SEC for their non-conference scheduling all summer, saying that this FCS bullshit has to stop immediately. And I have also said that there's no doubt that the Big Ten East is the best division in football, especially considering the demise of LSU in the SEC West. So probably never thought you'd hear that out of me. That's been coming out of my mouth all summer. All right, before we get you out of here, well, I want you to talk about your proxy stuff, but no, before that, let's get a Final Four from you. You want to hear mine first? Or you want to go first?
I do want to hear yours.
Okay.
Go ahead.
All right. Alabama's schedule is such a joke. I got to put them in there. Clemson. I actually slightly lean to Clemson having a better overall roster than Alabama, but I think Alabama's QB situation is better. Although I haven't seen the Trevor Lawrence freshman kid. If he ends up beating out Kelly Bryant, I could change my mind on that. And then I will go... I mean, I think the next two teams you're thinking, it's got to be Wisconsin versus whoever wins, you know, the Big Ten East, okay? And then I think it's whoever wins the Stanford-Washington game. Just because I like to be different, be an underdog, I'm going to say Wisconsin and Stanford, although I know that it could very easily be Washington or Ohio State or even Harbaugh's team, maybe even Michigan. I think they're going to have one of the better defenses in America. So that, but I'll go Wisconsin, Stanford, Alabama, Clemson. What say you?
This is why I hate the 4-team playoff, because there's like 6 teams that I really like, and you pretty much touched on all of them except for Oklahoma. So you're right. Bama's got an easy schedule. Bama's a favorite for a reason. Bama's in. Clemson, I agree. I do not want to see those two play each other again, but it sure looks like Vegas thinks that's what's going to happen. you know, big fan of the Clemson Tigers, at least from a betting perspective. I'm going to go against you. I agree. It's either going to be Ohio State, Michigan. I'm not so high on Wisconsin this year. I know you are, and maybe that just means I need to do a little bit more homework. So I'm going to throw in Michigan. And like I said, I'm kind of high on this Washington team. I was really high on them last year, and they really disappointed me. So I hope that I'm not just going back for more abuse, but I'm going to throw Washington in there, and I'll leave Oklahoma sitting on the sidelines in the Big 12.
Yeah, I will agree with you on Washington as the slight underdog against Auburn. I know it's a long trip east, and it'll be a road environment, but Auburn doesn't play very good in Atlanta, and Chris Peterson brought Kellen Moore, Boise State team, to Atlanta. I guess that's about the same travel distance, and just absolutely beat Aaron Murray and Georgia up and down the field. They were up 35-7 late third quarter. Georgia got some garbage touchdowns to make it look respectable at 35-21. But Chris Peterson, hell, when he was at Boise, he came east. He beat Virginia Tech in a thriller up where the Redskins play. He's gone east in week one when he was at Boise and pulled big upsets. This would not be a big upset. I think everybody and their sister would make Washington the favorite on a legit neutral field. Great stuff as always. Follow Kelly on Twitter at Kelly in Vegas. Now, break it down for all of our listeners that want to get into a gambling contest, a handicapping contest. You offer a proxy service. Are we coming up on some deadlines? Do they have time? Give us the floor is yours. Give us the breakdown.
So there's two really good contests in town that I love. I love the Golden Nuggets Ultimate Football Contest. They redid it this year. 7 NFL or college football sides a week, $1,000 buy-in. Great contest. Why? Because I love college football. The Super Contest, 5 NFL sides against the spread every week for 17 weeks, $1,500 buy-in, by far one of the best contests in the world in terms of football handicapping. And basically what we do is you come to Vegas, you sign up, we get you in as a proxy, and then we do the legwork for you for the next 17 weeks and put in plays on your behalf. So you live in Florida, you live in Atlanta, wherever, you can fly in, get signed up, takes about 15, 20 minutes if it's not too busy down there. And we get you taken care of, and you can enjoy the rest of your vacation in Vegas.
And she's also got a Twitter handle for the proxy service. You can follow that at KIV Proxy Service. Kelly, as always, great stuff. Enjoyed it. Thanks for your time. And I will see you in late October, and I'll be in touch sooner than later. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you having me on. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Kelly Stewart, or Kelly in Vegas. We're going to take a quick break, come back and wrap things up. Don't go anywhere. All right, welcome back to Games Galore 45, closing segment, wrapping things up. Ariel Helwani reporting in the last hour that Francis Ngannou, owner of a two-fight losing streak since he nearly decapitated Alistair Overeem, will fight Curtis Razor Blades. That's one of the better nicknames in the UFC.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah. And the UFC Fight Night Beijing headliner. Oh, no, they're putting Ngannou in a 5-round fight. Blades will finish him earlier than that, but
dude, that's got to be brutal. Like, if you have to fly to China,
yeah,
and your whole schedule, like, do they get in like a week or two before so they can adjust?
Yeah, well, a lot of people gave because when Kane was on his second reign as champion, and he went down to Mexico City, which has major altitude,
right?
And he only went down a week before, and Verdum had been down there for his previous fight when he was supposed to fight Kane. Kane pulled out and he beat Mark Hunt, and then it got scheduled to fight Kane, and Verdum was down there for a month.
So he just stayed and trained.
And if you remember that fight, You know, we've never seen Kane gas out. I mean, he's got the best cardio of any heavyweight ever.
Right.
Kane gassed out because of the elevation in Mexico City. And when he went for that takedown, Verdum guillotined him. And I'm not implying Beijing has elevation. I have no idea.
Well, that's just a total time shift, right? You go to Beijing and, like, you're supposed to be fighting at the time you'd be sleeping.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I mean, they go at least, well, they've got to be there at least a week in advance for every fight just for media responsibilities. But I mean,
I got you.
If it's elevation or that far to get your body clock right, I mean, you should be there at least 2 weeks in advance. And if it's elevation like a Mexico City, or if you're fighting in Denver, or if you're fighting wherever, all our Chinese listeners, hook me up with an email.
Yeah, let us know.
Let me know if Beijing's. I don't feel like Googling it. Let us know if
Beijing's got to be like a solid 12 hours difference.
Oh, I would assume so. Yeah.
Yeah, it's the other side of the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, dude, I mean, if you're training in Florida,
I mean, do you go toward Hawaii and Alaska to get there?
Yeah, you go up and around.
Okay, that's how I think so.
Unless you might, I mean, maybe you'd cut over Europe. I don't know.
I don't know.
Who knows? Anyways, continue on.
Yes. Blades is going to F
and destroy him.
He's going to destroy Ngannou.
I feel like his spirit's broken, dude. He was like this like knockout king, and now he's just.
God, and Dana just keeps pissing on him. He's just been verbally just giving it to him.
Because what's his story? He like worked in like a pit mine or something. Like,
well, he grew up in Cameroon.
Right, Cameroon. Yeah,
but French now. But Dana has been, you know, just bashing him because he had been training at the UFC Performance Institute in Vegas, and like 4 or 5 weeks out of the fight, or I mean, before the fight with Stipe, he like took off to France for 2 weeks.
Just to party and drink wine.
Who knows? Dana said he didn't know what he was doing, but he wasn't preparing for a heavyweight title shot. And then, I mean, Derek Lewis is back, flares up a lot. And so that can kind of explain.
It's a big dude.
Yeah, that can kind of explain his performance on that fight with Ngannou. What the fuck Ngannou was doing? I have no freaking idea what
dude,
he was doing.
That fight to me, like, almost
worst fight ever.
Worst fight ever. You and I came out on top. We won, which was awesome.
It was the most beautiful,
boring,
worst fight,
horrible fight.
Boringly, it was excitingly boring.
Yeah, I guess, man. That's one of those fights where I was watching. And I was like, did somebody pay him to lose?
Right. We're getting like plus 280, weren't we? Had 25 to 174, right?
Something, yeah. I mean, it was good.
Yeah.
But that was one of the times where I was like, I don't know, man. It feels like either they're both in on it. Like, it felt like they were both paid to lose.
Or maybe they're both paid to, well, how could it be a draw?
Right.
Nobody was getting a 10-8 round. There was certainly not a 10-8 round going on. All right, some injury updates. This is for you hardcore folks. Get your Phil Steele book out now. And I can. I told you about Blacklock, the TCU nose guard co-defensive freshman of the year last season, out for the year, torn Achilles per reports from 24/7 Sports. Bowling Green, for you Maction lovers, has dismissed Armani Posey, 52 tackles last year. So you can mark him off of their depth chart or over in your little stat box on your Bowling Green page via Phil Steele Mag. Also, Dereon Hutchins was dismissed earlier this summer. And now, senior defensive end David Konowalski is out for the season with a torn Achilles. Konowalski had 56 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, 3.5 sacks, and 6 QB hurries last year. Bowling Green is not going to be any good this year. Now they're going to be even worse. By the way, offshores have started this past weekend releasing some totals And where's my tweet about that? The lowest is LSU Miami at 45.5. The highest, where in the hell is my tweet about it? I believe it's North Texas SMU at 74.5. That was as of like 2 days ago. Doggone. Oh, yeah, here it is. Yeah, I'm sorry. It was SMU at North Texas, 74. Lowest, 45.5 for Miami, LSU. Brad Powers and I, we talked about Texas Tech Ole Miss. Surely had to be 70. Didn't quite make 70. 67. Other injuries of note. Penn State's defense, big hit. Junior defensive end, Ryan Buchholz. He's had multiple back surgeries. Has decided to retire. Started 6 games last year. 18 tackles, 2 sacks, 3 QB hurries. Okay, week 0.5 or 1/2. We do have college football in 9 days. Wait, the 25th. So, yeah, today's Thursday, right? Yep.
Yep,
9 days. Wyoming is at New Mexico State. Wyoming, junior starting linebacker, Cash. It's a pretty cool name, man. So Cash? You Cash? Don't even know if you're having a boy or a girl a month from now. If you have a boy, I mean, I say Cash is in the top 8 candidates for...
It's played out, man. Everybody's Cash these days.
Yeah, I mean, you know. I mean,
I'm just kidding.
I just said top 8.
Yeah,
I
mean, yeah. Well, throw top it out. 8. I'll
can you,
throw
can
it
you write it down on a piece of paper, Cash? Or like... Edwards suggested Cash, and then you're...
I'll put that in. I'll throw it in the hat.
Jody, the wife Arbo, will just immediately just... No, it's not. By the way, my cousin... Oh, man. My cousin is sending me a text right now. I'll have to look at it. My first cousin's son is a fullback at Rice. He caught a touchdown in the scrimmage the other day.
Nice.
Jacob Doddridge. Check him out. And Jonah Doddridge is going to be a junior at Dallas South Lake Carroll. He has medical clearance after breaking his back snow skiing.
Ooh. That's was it bad? Was it? I mean, I guess anytime you break your back.
My first cousin was recording it.
Oh, my gosh.
I watched it. Not live.
Was it like, I mean, did he like
his back was broken.
Did he hit a tree or something?
Oh, no. He was getting so much air. I mean.
He was like 100 feet in the air.
Oh, yeah. And his dad, my first cousin, is just like, is down, you know, readying for him to
right.
just get all this air. And he's recording it. And then once they figured out he was okay, like a week later, he like slowed down the video where we could actually slow motion see him breaking his. Oh
my
man.
Goodness. It well, I'm glad he's all right, man.
Oh, yeah. He's fine. He's stacked. I'm sure he's. Well, I guess they've already started practice, but he's been cleared. So I guess he's. In fact, Rice plays at LSU on the 17th, and cousin Jonathan wants cousin Brent and his brother, which is also my cousin Ryan. Wants us to go to the game at FIU on October 20th, but I'm going to Nashville to watch the Gators and Vandy October 13th. I'm going to Vegas the weekend after, and I hate South Florida. So I'm not doing that. So I recommended Rice plays at LSU November 17th. I recommended Friday in New Orleans, and then check that, Thursday and Friday in New Orleans.
There you go.
Saturday in Baton Rouge, but then Jonathan said, well, now that Jonah's been cleared, that's the first round of the playoffs. He says he's going to be in Baton Rouge Saturday for sure, but he might be in Dallas for a first-round playoff game. I mean, what is he going to do? Not sleep and at midnight start driving to Baton Rouge from Dallas? I mean,
hop on a plane, man. Why are we driving?
I guess we don't know what time the game – we probably won't know what time the game is until like a week in advance. So,
right.
But if it's the noon game, oh, he's not sleeping.
Do parents just like get tickets? Are they like,
yeah, every player? I mean, I don't know how many like a freshman, every player right. gets a couple of tickets for their family.
I gotcha. That makes sense.
And a member of our family is going to every one of his games.
Right on.
If it's not Jonathan's wife, Claire,
it's going to be support.
It's going to be my aunt and uncle, Suzanne and Rocky, or either Jonathan or Claire. Or Jonathan and Jonah, or Claire and Daisy. Shout out Daisy, Grace, Doddridge. I think she's a freshman now. They haven't let her be on, or I'm assumed they it was a rule. I don't know. She just was allowed to open her first social media account.
That makes sense to me. I'm cool
absolutely
with that.
Nobody. You should have kids on that stuff.
Yeah.
So Daisy,
I don't want my daughter selling protein powder on Instagram.
Right. Daisy Doddridge is now on Instagram. And I don't want any Game School or listeners following her. She's out of your league.
Too late.
She's out of your league, guys. All right. Wyoming, Cash, Maluia is out for the opener at New Mexico State. One game suspension. He had 74 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, 3 passes broken up, 1 interception, 1 sack last year. Also for the Cowboys, not the Cowgirls, the Wyoming Cowboys of Laramie. Sophomore nose tackle Navari Jackson, his injured back has him out for the year. 24 tackles, 1.5 TFLs last year. TFLs are tackles for loss. Also, Wyoming, offensive guard Gavin Rush, 22 career starts, out for the year with a biceps injury. Sophomore offensive tackle Alonzo Velasquez, no kin to Kane, relations-wise, as far as I know.
Who knows?
Started 10 games last year as a freshman. Out next Saturday at New Mexico State. And finally, Josiah Hall, defensive end for Wyoming. Blood clot. Questionable at New Mexico State. 24 tackles, 2 TFLs last year. Now for New Mexico State, junior defensive end Cedric Wilcotts. First team all Sun Belt last year. Suspended for the first 2 games. Academic reasons. Had 8.5 sacks, 3.5 TFLs. 6 QB hurries, 3 passes broken up, and 3 forced fumbles. Last year, he'll miss the Aggies' home game in the opener against Wyoming and at Minnesota on a very short week in a tough spot for the Aggies. Told you about Ross Blacklock of TCU, out for the year. And that pretty much covers the injuries in my tweets the last few days. But go back, check my Twitter account. I've been pretty on top. Here's another one. I went back a week or two. Utah backup running back Devontae Henry Cole out for the entire season. Rushed for 279 yards, 2 touchdowns, 5.1 YPC last year. YPC yards per carry average. What else did I wrote down something else I was going to hit on in this final. I got to Ngannou Blades. I did injuries. Let me minimize these. Oh, I know what it was. It was the prop bet that they have SBR sports picks. There's a prop for who's leading the SEC in passing yards this year. Drew Locke, the plus 200 chalk. Jordan Ta'amu, Ole Miss, plus 300. Bentley, plus 600. Stidham, 8-1. Fromm, 8-1. Tua, 12-1. Fitzgerald, 12-1. Starkle, 20-1. And Shermer, 21-1. I don't know, man. I mean, Atamu's got a chance, but I would prefer Locke. I'll say Locke, but I'm not suggesting bet on it. Thanks to KIV with Wager Talk now. And check out our proxy service. Follow her on Twitter at Kelly in Vegas. Follow me on Twitter at Vegas B. Edwards. Follow sunsetpictures.com on Instagram. And follow. We also have a Game Schooler podcast page on Twitter that I don't know the handle. I think it's at Game Schooler Podcast, if I'm not mistaken, or at Game Schooler Pod. Game Schooler 45 in the books. Thanks for listening. Spread the word. Subscribe. Rate.
Do all the things.
All those things on iTunes. And we will talk to you next week. Nine days from 2 college football games, and therefore that would be 14 days from lots of Thursday scrub games. Actually, Northwestern Purdue. Oh, and by the way, I'm hearing Clayton Thorson could be ready by week 1 for that Purdue-Northwestern game. I think that's on a Thursday. That's a good game on a Thursday. Over and out. Smell ya. Sun Dogs. Will Haraway, listen in. Happy birthday.
This is the Landry Football with Chris Landry. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Bill Belichick doing is as brilliant as he's been in reinventing his team year in and year out is second to none. And we'll see how he ends up with the championship total. But I think he's the best ever. Nick Saban, look, he's now tied for the most titles ever in college football history. He's done it at two places, winning national titles, and did a good job at Michigan State. I mean, he's won everywhere he's been, Toledo, you name it. So I think that they are the best in their respective sports. But people ask me which one's better. Well, some are better in different things between the two. Bill Belichick is the brighter of the football minds. A lot of what Nick Saban learned was from Bill Belichick. Now, there's some things that Bill Belichick learned from Nick Saban, by the way, and I don't know if people are aware of that, but I've seen it, lived it, been around them where they both learned it.
Chris Landry brings you Landry Football every week on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and, of course, RadioInfluence.com.